Welcome to MMGO Podcast 10.15, where we talk about basketball for two segments, and then there are two more segments. Welcome to the MMGO Podcast. I am besieged by the help. Hello, help.
Hello, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Well, I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to him.
Oh, he's the help?
Well, it's just pointed, and so then people know.
It's a very visual podcast. You know, he's giving me stick. Well, and I'm like, what's with the stick?
That's your relationship now. You invite him on the podcast, and now he's...
I already have a kid who's going on three. I get plenty of stick at home. Anyway.
Are you saying that I'm your kid?
No, well, I'm just saying that he's like kind of uppity as a 3-year-old is, and you're kind of same genre.
I mean, if you want us to just nod this entire podcast and you just
No, it's completely fine. I'm just like...
Brian Cook monologue?
Right.
Just pointing out that like...
Hey, Brian!
See, that's...
The Brian Hughes Show.
Not helping your comparison with the 3-year-old.
The Brian Hughes Show. That's interesting.
All right, now you're on the list too. Both of you are on the list. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grant, and Lantana Hummus. Can we talk about some actual, like, activities, events?
As long as it doesn't involve any lists.
Fine. That's fine. No lists.
Yeah.
What would you like to talk about?
Let's talk about the basketball team.
We could talk about some basketball. Okay.
So... Michigan has their last major conference opponents before they get into the meat of the Big Ten schedule. They endure against Northwestern.
Endure is probably a good word.
Well, I mean, sort of, because they're up 15 in the second half, and you're like, this is going the way it always goes. And then all of a sudden, it's like, what happened?
It's one of those games where if it was reversed and you were trailing, and pull it out, you feel like you stole one. But if you... The way that it happened where they led the whole game and then almost gave it away. Like, if you lose that one, like, really sucks because it's like we've had this the entire time.
Well, and the kind of the way that they managed to stay in the game, the Northwestern Wildcats, was by taking NBA step-back threes. And, okay, like, if that's the way it's going to happen, if, you know, Law is going to hit 4 of 8 with maybe, like, one good look and one okay look,
yeah.
And the rest of it was just like, I wonder if I can hit this shot from out of my butt. And he's like, oh, I can. Because that's what he's done most of his career. He is a very good shooter. But even so, like, kind of to get that on your face was a little bit frustrating.
Especially, Derek Parton made a 3-2.
He banked it in.
So he had a really good first half.
He did. And, you know, you go back and you look at it, and a lot of it, like, it kind of felt like Teskey was getting taken to the bucket, which did happen a couple times.
Yeah.
But a lot of it was other guys giving up perimeter drives and then Teskey coming to help and then that going as it can go.
Okay, so like overplaying or helping in that sense.
Well, I mean, I think Teskey has to help.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what he's...
And then the shot creation being so good kind of goes back to the perimeter in that case.
So it's not staying in front of guys.
Right. And Michigan has been exceptional at that all year. And kind of in these two games, you got some breakdowns. Like, kind of more in the South Carolina game.
Yeah, we'll get to
them. We'll get to in the next segment.
Right.
But, you know, so there were a couple of instances where Parton was able to, like, get up a hook shot. And, like, he caught the front of the rim once and it still went in. And, you know, there were a couple of rolls that I think he got. And then he banks in the three. So, like, how efficient was he supposed to be? Probably... you know, 4 or 5 points less efficient.
Not that efficient.
If we're playing this game 100 more times. Still pretty efficient, but not like 11 for 15. And then Michigan's able to shut him off in the second half because they double with Iggy because Iggy's on Gaines, I believe, who's just not a shooter.
Right. So you can leave him.
No, that's an inversion of our...
They also fouled him a bunch because he was missing his free throws that game. He missed the front end of their...
Yeah, I don't know if any of that was part of the plan or just something that happened.
He was 1 of 5. Wow.
Yeah, and he's actually been a fairly decent free throw shooter this year. Just didn't happen. And then kind of the rest... I mean, we're talking about a team that didn't get to 1 point per possession and hit a bunch of circus shots. Yeah. So it's kind of like... We're just picking nits with the defense there.
Well, I mean, Michigan had their own offensive struggles, and I think that's what also led to this still being a close game.
Yeah, and so people are complaining about the auto bench for Charles Matthews, and that is not something I am feeling, because Matthews has 3 points in this game.
Right.
One of them is on a breakaway dunk.
Correct.
And the other one comes on his third free throw after a two-point shooting foul because Pardon commits a lane violation. So... He's really, really scuffling. Michigan's defense doesn't really miss a beat with him off the floor. And I'm just like, that doesn't count as an auto bench to me, even though it's like he has some fouls, right? Because I don't think having Livers out there is negatively impacting your team's performance.
Do you think it affected them on the offensive end, though?
I mean, no.
Because Livers had 2 shots. One of them was like an awkward drive, I think, to the basket.
But at least he's not... having the same number of points as Matthews on the same number of shots.
Well, that's true. Like, I mean, Matthews was 1 of 7.
So Matthews is in there, and like he still kind of thinks of himself as like the guy who makes shots, creates shots.
Sure.
And I don't think that's what he needs to be against a team with a really good defense like Northwestern, especially when he's kind of struggling. And they're being coached really well to not let those guys get on their right hand.
Yeah, which made it into the broadcast.
And when you take away Matthews' right hand, it's kind of like, well, what's he going to do dribbling around? Maybe cutting, maybe spotting up. That's completely fine. But, like, you know, he was just kind of the responsible party on a number of kind of ugly Michigan possessions.
And even if he beats a guy and gets the basket and gets fouled, like, is that a win for Michigan?
I mean, his free throw shooting has gone from Xavier Simpson level to maybe a notch or two above. So,
well, my point still stands.
Sure.
His fadeaway jumpers go in at a larger number of rate, but I still don't like the...
It's a bad shot, but yeah. He's good at it. So like,
yeah.
Like, it's, you know, when there's 8 seconds on the shot clock, that's a great shot to get off.
It's fine for, like, a bailout shot.
Yeah.
But that's not primary offense.
Well, I mean, like... He gets the ball at the top of the key, and, like, that's his idea.
Well, you're also just going to mix that stuff in. Like, you got Teske free throw line jumpers.
Mm-hmm.
They go down on an acceptable rate, but they're not, like... When that goes up, I'm not like, oh, that was a great possession. But it gives people something to think about. It makes people defend a little bit differently. So I think that some level of this is not a great shot is acceptable. And that's a good one to have, I guess.
Like keeping the defense honest, so to speak.
Well, yeah. So, like, you know, you're going to have to pop out and defend Teske at the free throw line, that kind of thing. And that opens up other better shots. So it's kind of like...
And if anyone can design a play off of that for, like, a pass of a backdoor cut, it's John Beilein.
So, you know, Matthews is really scuffling, and Michigan has this kind of lull in the first half, and they get rescued from it by Iggy, who has a outstanding, was it 24 points on how many shot equivalents?
23 on 18.
18 shot equivalents?
Yeah, it was 9 of 18.
It's more shots than I thought he had, but... Anyway, he's able to get to the bucket and get some tough drives and finish with both hands around the rim. Because Pardon's not really a rim protector.
Right, they're closing out on him.
Yeah, I mean, you got to close out on him. He's a 40% plus 3-point shot.
Right, which he also hit in this game. I mean, this was another like step in his breakout performance, I thought.
He was the only one hitting threes in that game.
That's true.
He is broken out.
I think it is a past tense now.
He's showing up in first-round mock drafts. He is.
Yeah.
The breakout has occurred. I think it occurred against probably UNC. That was the last point in which he could be called anything other than Michigan star, probably, right? Like,
yeah, no.
Who is the NBA guy who said, like, it's a knock against him that he plays for Michigan because Beilein coaches them too well?
Sam Vecenie, I think that's how you pronounce it. He writes for The Athletic, and he had, like, he put up how does top 50, and Iggy was 50th. And the comment section was like, what about Iggy? So he wrote like an extra post in the comment section about Iggy that contained that. Yeah, hopefully he's right. I'd love that to be correct.
I just think we should, you know, broadcast that.
And you know, the interesting thing is that AJ Lawson, who Michigan played in the next game, was a slot in front of him, which was like, okay, that's interesting. But back to the Northwestern game, you know, I just, you know, they have that 15-point lead, and then Teske picks up his third or fourth.
Yeah, I think it was his third because he got one later.
And then they bring in Austin Davis. That's the period when Michigan's lead evaporates.
Right.
And people are like, oh, Austin Davis is terrible. And like...
we can't get to that yet.
Well, we should talk about his performance in this game. The first bucket comes when Teske's on the floor. And then if you go and you look back at the game, none of the makes that they had in that run were really on him.
They weren't directly related to something that Davis...
Right. It's not like he had to be for an offensive rebound or his man was picking up a bucket. But on the other end of the floor, you know, Iggy throws up an alley-oop because he thinks Teske's on the floor. And Teske would have thrown that down. And Davis has it kind of clank off his hands.
Yeah.
He has another, like, kind of... turnover thing that I kind of thought was a foul because it's like a fake dribble handoff and the guy runs into him, which is like, you can't, that's not, you know,
yeah,
in the city limits. So like I didn't necessarily think that Davis was like the huge blinking liability on defense, but like it just felt like the offense just bogged down in the same way. Like, you remember when Mark Dinal would get the bucket, the basket under the bucket, and then he would kick it out?
Yeah,
like right. Michigan would successfully execute the pick and roll to get the big a look at the basket, and he was like, "Nah, I can't do this." And
pass
and pass it.
Yeah,
up. And he was mostly correct about that. That was a fact of
good
life.
Decision.
And it kind of felt like that, where like all of a sudden all the Teske rolls and stuff that he's been really effective on were just not something anyone was looking for, and that made the offense just kind of crawl in a hole.
So
and die.
His foul rate is. Astronomical,
yeah.
Right. Do you think that that then leads to him getting more fouls? Like, in 50, when people see him in those situations where he bumps somebody, are they going to be more apt to call fouls because he's generally gets them anyway, so to speak? Like, it's his reputation. Remember how Wagner got calls because
he's not like
a little bit?
He's not like Wagner, though. He's more like that clunky guy in a YMCA league who, like, drives the best player on your team nuts because he throws like a perfect pass to him and he'll like drop it a little bit. And
that's the next game.
But you know what I'm saying?
I just think that he commits fouls.
Okay.
Like there's a difference between the Wagner stuff, which I thought was occasionally absurd.
Yeah.
And when Davis gets called for a foul, I'm like,
but he got called for a foul in that stretch that we were talking about.
There was the one on Pardon that was just like, what are you even calling?
Right. And that's my thing is like, do you think that in those situations, he's never going to get the benefit of the doubt?
That's not even a benefit of the doubt situation, though.
Well,
that was just like Pardon catching a pass and then Davis looking at him.
Yeah.
And they called a foul. So that was too incompetent to be based on anything Davis has ever done.
Fair.
Right.
I think if you're like a Chris Silva and you're like down there emoting a lot, then you're going to probably get the benefit of the doubt a few times. Like, that driving hard to the basket stuff that the announcers love to talk about is, you know, a little bit real.
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, isn't that what they say about coaches, like working the refs and then getting calls? I mean, that's kind of the same thing.
It's just more if you look like you're aggressive down there, they're going to give you the benefit. And if you look like you're just kind of, you know, gooping around.
Hmm. Well, I think there's something to if you look like you're being aggressive, it's because you are a superior athlete executing in the moment.
That could be.
And if you don't look aggressive, it's kind of because you're, I'm not very good at this. So that may be the case. It may just be the fact that one guy is a good player and one guy, not so much. But, you know, this is an A-rated game on KenPom. So Northwestern's in the top 50 on KenPom. I think they deserve to be. And this is on the road, which is... people continually even I do so sometimes, like, oh, a 2-point game. But if you look at the KenPom before this game, Michigan was favored by 6. So the difference between expectation and reality was basically the banked in 3. Right?
Like, yeah.
So this is, people underestimate how good Northwestern is because they had a couple of rough games early in the season, and what it means to play on a road in a newly renovated arena that, was much more of a pro-Northwestern crowd than I think I've ever seen at Northwestern. I think it's a combination of the fact that they got their bid against us a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And they have a new building, and they're like, all right, let's do this again. And so I thought it was a good road environment, which is not something you usually say about
Well, and they also got Billy Donlin, who we saw had a profound effect on Michigan's defense for the year that he was here. And so, I mean, why would you not think that it would translate to them? So if they can get any points and generate any sort of offense, they're probably going to be at least in games.
Right.
And that showed up against Indiana when they played them, right? They lost by two. Yeah. And that Indiana's
on the road.
And Indiana's a legit team making the tournament, probably. Yeah.
Didn't Donlin also recruit Xavier Simpson?
Well, I mean, he also knows a large section of this roster.
Right.
So, yeah. Like, if anyone was going to have Michigan scouted to death, it was going to be Northwestern.
Right. So, I mean, they're a legitimate opponent is kind of what I'm saying, and you should expect at least above average things from them.
I mean, that doesn't explain why Xavier missed all five of his threes.
I mean, kind of does, because, you know, Donlin was like, well, let's not cover this guy. And it worked.
You don't have to be Donlin to know, to try that.
Well, I mean, South Carolina didn't try it. It's strange that...
It was strange.
So,
but he also didn't take five threes in that game.
Well, I mean, he didn't really... they weren't sagging off him in the same way that Northwestern was daring him to shoot.
Right.
And they dared him to shoot, and he did.
Three straight possessions. Mm-hmm. I think that was the thing. It wasn't like they were five threes that were scattered throughout the course of a game. It was a lot of them were concentrated at one key stretch, and that's the shot that Michigan got time after time after time.
Right, and Michigan was the time that was Michigan had their lead whittled down.
Or didn't have a lead, I think, on one.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And so Brooks comes in, and Brooks has a couple of important plays. He hits a three.
Yeah, that was big.
And he also assists on a three by somebody. Charles Matthews, Poole?
It would have to be Iggy, because unless it was Poole's one.
They only had five threes.
Yeah.
Yeah, five out of 20.
I think it was Poole's one make.
Okay. That could have been.
Because Poole missed in the first half, and then the second half he had a good shot.
The rest of the team's about 5 of 15, so they're hitting 33%. They hit one more, they're at 40%. This is how, like, the percentages.
Yeah.
So, like, Northwestern did a great job of preventing Michigan from launching threes, unless they were Xavier Simpson threes.
Part of the Northwestern defensive game.
So
Teske had two open ones, too, in that one. Like, that, he missed both of those. Like, that... Michigan was 25%.
Yeah, the whole Teske thing is slow developing, I guess we'll say.
Well, and I think that this is just kind of
at least from three.
This is what can happen when Michigan doesn't make a lot of these shots, is the offense can bog down,
right.
And they don't, you know, they do have deficiencies at certain areas shooting the ball, and when those show up,
it's going to be a
game like that, yeah.
Yeah, the people taking the threes in this one, you know, the you would expect it to be more like 33%, given who was shooting. Even, you know, including Simpson's five and everything, right?
Right.
And for it to be 25% is a low number. Like, just like Northwestern was higher.
I mean,
than
he has these
shooting.
Games where he like just was like, all right, we gotta take these shots, and he's like 3 of 5 or something.
Yep.
And then it just goes away. It's unfortunate.
It's inconsistent, that's all.
But I mean, so this is a game where Michigan shooting didn't go so well. They were very well scouted on the road against a good opponent. And their opposition hit an absurd number of very tough shots.
Plus, how many...
Originally not the last one.
Yeah, for real. Plus, how many games at Northwestern has this happened? Like, this is at least
they were on, like,
third,
a two-game winning losing streak at Northwestern.
Third or fourth time when the game has come down to, like, the final bucket?
Well, every Northwestern game is, like... The opposing coach loses his mind, sacrifices a chicken, like rips a monkey into shreds.
I forgot about that clip.
On the sideline.
Yeah.
And like starts hooting and hollering like he's at a...
Hooting and hollering?
He's at a
barn dance?
He's at a barn dance and he's... The cow walks in and he's like, all right, we get to ride a cow. I don't know what goes on at barn dances, clearly.
I think Collins was trying to mate with a cow.
But Collins is like on all fours, just like... Like
he's slapping the floor, wasn't he?
He was slapping the floor. he's just going, ah!
Does he not watch Michigan State?
And that should be a technical foul. Any coach venturing onto the court.
So he was on the court when this was going on.
He was on the court. On the court. On the basketball court.
He may have 1 foot out of bounds.
Any coach venturing onto the court when the ball is in play should have a finger cut off and also be assessed a technical foul.
Both.
Both. Because, you know, some guys are just going to be like, I don't got any more fingers. So there's still got to be something that's a punishment. You know what I saw? I was watching the beginning of the Villanova-LaSalle game.
Really?
It was on right before the Purdue game.
Okay.
So I was just flipping it on. When LaSalle scores their first bucket, like everybody in the audience throws streamers onto the court.
Onto the court.
So they got to like clean it all up.
So was this a one-time thing, or is this what they do?
This is what they do every game. And they assess a technical foul, a one-shot technical foul, and then Villanova's guy intentionally steps over the free throw line to invalidate it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm taking that shot if I'm Villanova. I'm not dealing with this whole like streamers business. Like, no way.
Yeah, I don't really understand. Is that like setting off flares in a soccer game when they throw them onto the field?
Well, I mean, it's just
it's a less disgusting octopus.
Like they have this tradition, and I saw one on Twitter that was even more annoying, where it's like it's called Silent Night, and it's at some like D2 school. And what happens is everybody is dead silent until the team scores its 10th point, and then they rush the court.
10th point?
10th point.
So they rush the court in the middle of the game?
In the middle of the game.
Every game, assuming they get more than 9 points.
Taylor University.
This is a once-a-year thing. So I don't even know if they're D2, but they're some small
school. It's just one game?
Just one game.
Why?
I mean, just because it's fun, I guess. But I feel like if you're going to have that fun, that there should be a one-point technical shot that you suffer. Like, you can have your fun, but there needs to be consequences to this fun. Do I sound like a dad now? Do I sound like a... You are 2 years old, and I am giving you advice.
Whatever happened to, like, this is cool, man? Like, this traditions is, are mean, cool. Weirdness is cool.
I'm all for traditions.
I'm all not... right with traditions, but not when it's, like, in the middle of a game.
Right, like, I'm trying to watch a basketball game, and you guys...
Or they're trying to play a basketball game. Right, they're right. Like, all right, well, don't get this bucket, because I'm not ready to, like, go in the locker room for 10 minutes right. while they clean everything up.
Yeah, it's...
I have personally thrown an octopus on the ice before. I can't talk.
That's different, because it's like, how many goals do you get scored?
But the play stops after a goal, so you can go clean it up.
We also threw crayfish at the Yost once.
Man, the cops are going to come to us. They're going to be like, you! We're arresting you for wildlife.
I feel like we should move on to the South Carolina section.
All right, fine.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Oh, Lil Wayne from New Orleans. Fresh out the Navy, now the captain of my own team. Hop in this machine, vanish from the scene. Goddamn it, I'm so managed, handle it like a standard. So put your panties in your pants by the trash can. Romance on the floor plans, yeah. We hold hands while we rolling. Just trying to keep up with the program. Just trying to sneak up on you, like how you doing, ma'am? I'm an old soul and a young man. We got to an end, we didn't stop till the birds hit the block, and she ain't never had it like that.
So in similar fashion, South Carolina is an 11-point win in which Machine was favored by slightly more on KenPom. That felt so much worse to a large number of people because South Carolina cracked a point per possession. And coming into this game, they were like the number 173 KenPom offense. So this is like, how much do we have to revise our opinion of the defense down?
Yeah, I mean, they had some bad losses, and I think they had a couple games where they didn't score a lot of points. But then I watched them play, and I was kind of like, I thought they had two or three good players that seemed like they could produce. Like, they had, what was it, Bryant, I think?
Well, he's a freshman who didn't really play in the first half.
Right, that was the thing. And then the second half, I thought he showed some crazy athleticism to get to the basket, and, like, his finishing was fine. He ended up with, I think, like, was like 6 of 13 or something from the field. Yeah, he was like 6 of 13 with 13 points. So maybe not super efficient, but they had ways to put the ball in the basket, or it seemed.
So part of that felt like it was turnovers, but I went back and I watched the game, and there were only four South Carolina buckets that could be attributed to some sort of open court situation. So there was one where Michigan thought they were going to get a turnover, and it ended up being an open three for South Carolina.
Okay.
Jordan Poole's like running down court like you should.
Yeah.
And then there was like the liver strip, and there were a couple more. But it was only like four, and then there was like a couple more borderline ones, which didn't feel like more than a usual game. I mean, maybe a little bit, because Michigan has the lowest steal rate in the country, I think. So they're averaging like 3% of their possessions end up in open court turnovers.
Yeah.
So maybe it was like a couple more than usual, but not as much as I thought watching it live. At the end of the first half, I was like, you know, we have fewer steals in this game. We're up 14 points at halftime. And maybe not so much. So, but they did turn the ball over an inordinate amount. It was a very strange game because they rebounded a ton of their misses. They turned the ball over a bunch. They made free throws.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that was because all of their free throws were coming from Iggy and Poole.
Iggy and Poole, right.
It felt like a very different kind of Michigan team.
It was the anomaly game.
Right. And like a lot of those turnovers were because South Carolina does have a lot of long guys on the court.
Right.
And they were trying to feed like Teske on the pick and roll, and the pass was a little bit off, and you didn't have that margin for error against the kind of team that Frank Martin constructs, because he's always got international dudes with crazy hops.
Nations contingent.
Well, and if you look at, you know, Bryant, and you look at AJ Lawson, those guys are both 6'6 with long arms.
Right.
So, you know, there were some reasons why South Carolina should have been able to do that. But it did feel like Michigan was being just sloppy.
Yeah. I would say sloppy is the key word, especially in the first half, like we talked about. I think they cleaned it up a little bit, and they started making a few more shots in the second half.
Well, I think they had, 11 turnovers in the first half?
Something like that. It was close to double digits if it wasn't there, and they ended up with 16, which is still really high.
Yeah.
I mean, to get, what, 6 or 7 turnovers in a half for Beilein seems even high.
Yeah, but I mean, if they have 5 in the second half, that's pretty much their average.
Yeah, because it's usually around 9 or 10, I think.
So it's really just the first half where, you know, they have a 6-point lead and then a half, and it kind of felt like if Michigan was playing to their usual standard, it would have been a 15-point lead.
Well, it felt like the game was almost over about 5 or 6 times, and then it wasn't. And then they would like creep up to that borderline 3-4 score possession lead, and you were like, all right, I'm going to get to this point where I start relaxing, and then South Carolina would go on like 5-point run, and you're just like, well, now it's still a game. And it seemed to kind of extend like that for most of the last like maybe 3 quarters.
Even
of the
when
game.
It was tied, it was not a close, like, it was like, okay, as soon as this weird stuff stops happening, Michigan's going to pull away. And they would pull away, and then
the weird stuff would start happening again.
Yeah, but according to KenPom, this never got even close to 92%.
Well, no, when you have a team that is very good playing a team that isn't so good, and it's at home.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a lot of lead to actually start building up some win percentage unless it's late.
Well, and you were never worried that they were going to lose this game, per se. No. It just felt like it should be a few more possessions, I guess.
Yeah, you know, a lot of that came down to the fact that I think Michigan wasn't defending twos as well as they usually do. Like, Matthews kind of had a couple of blow-bys, which almost never happens. And then there were some takes where Bryant was able to finish over him, which were pretty impressive. And then Mike Kotsar was...
Is it Mike?
That's what they were saying.
It's spelled M-A-I-K, I think.
Right, so it...
Mike?
I think they were saying Mike on the broadcast, because I
can usually trust what they say.
Well, the play-by-play guy, anyway.
All right.
So he was on Iggy, and he's got a 4-inch vert on him, and he was able to get down to the post a little bit, but then he was just hitting, like, hook shots from the foul line, like, you know, the backboard. They go off the backboard, and it looks like he's just throwing it, like, not even over the rim.
Yeah, they did have, like, what, three or four unintentionally banked in shots. Yeah,
that was debatable, but, you know, I think that, you know, those were just shots that happened to go in. One thing that I do think we should prepare ourselves for is that, like, the Villanova UNC level of 2-point defense is simply not sustainable.
Yeah, I was starting to think that.
Because it's, you know, Michigan, what kind of team would they have to be to maintain that? It's basically Kentucky. Like, you have to be all NBA guys who are incredibly long and everybody can contest shots like Teske can.
Right.
And that's not the case. So Michigan should, I mean, we should kind of expect some backsliding on the 2-point percentage as the season goes along. Still going to be a really good defense. Still has a shot at being number one, but it's not going to be like, oh, we're 6 points better for Virginia per 100 possessions.
Right. Because they just don't have, like, the makeup of that.
Right. So Iggy is a game defender, and he's a very good defender, and he did a great job on Pascal. But going back to that game, Pascal probably should have made some more of those shots.
And I believe, like, Villanova missed a few layups in there, too, I think.
Right. So just the quality of shot that Michigan is allowing is not, we're the best 2-point defense in the country by a mile.
I think that was the thing that surprised me the most, is like when we talked about where South Carolina's rating was on offense, then I looked at, like, I watched some play, and they had two or three guys that looked like they could win one-on-one matchups and score.
Well, Silva,
and I was like, how has this offense been so bad?
I mean, Silva was like the star of their Final Four team, and he kind of gave it to Michigan 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So
he was a dog in this game, too.
But he went into this game shooting 41% from two. And I just don't know how that happens. Like, I know that they've had some struggles and they don't really have a point guard, but, like, and he was at 48% last year, so.
He just had a bad start.
He was just 50% in this game.
Well, that's not a guy that should be hitting 50%. That's a guy who should be hitting 65%.
Yeah.
But they have no offense. So they have to have him drive from the perimeter, which worked a couple of times, so it was shocking that it did, but. Yeah, it was frustrating. I think after the game, Beilein was pretty frustrated. I wonder how locked in mentally they were, because they've been locked in the whole season. And
right.
Beilein was talking about how, we're like, you can't sag off Gravett, and they did.
And he made all three of his shots.
And you can't let Silva go right, and they let him go right. Hmm. So it just kind of feels like maybe they didn't have that mentality that they've had the rest of the year, because it's a home game. It's right before, you know, your kind of lull period.
It's at noon,
and you don't have a lot of respect for the opponent because you've seen their stats, right?
Right.
So it just, like, when Charles Matthews gets a blow by, I'm like, something is a little bit off.
And those games just happen, right? Like, that's just part of it. That's part of a season. You play 30 some games. You're going to have games where you're just not at your highest capabilities.
Right. And then I guess we should probably talk about the looming issue, which is this game was pretty bad for Austin Davis.
Yeah.
Like there's a turnover where they dump it down to him on the pick and roll, and he just kind of boots it out of bounds. He boots a defensive rebound to a South Carolina player. He did have a man some offensive rebound. We should give him credit for that.
Yes, he did.
But I have been a... I don't know if I've really been a...
zealot?
I mean, I said he's going to be fine for 5 to 10 minutes a game as a backup center. Don't know about that anymore. Because...
well, he did play 4 minutes.
He
played 7 minutes against Northwestern.
And it's just like, those haven't gone very well.
Is it his... maybe they're just too small sample size, but it seems like when he's on the court, Eli Brooks is always on the court, and you might be having maybe your two least athletic guys on defense on the court together, and it seems like that is not a good idea. They did that against, I think, North Carolina, and like things went poorly, and North Carolina made a couple shots, and then I don't know that it happened against Northwestern, but I did notice that during Davis's couple minutes that Brooks was also on the court in this game. And
that's the thing, though. Xavier and Teske have that pick and roll game down.
Sure.
And Davis does not have that game down with anybody, so.
Sure, but I just mean on defense of where you're like, well, if we're bringing Davis in, we might want to keep guys on the floor. They're going to stay in front of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably hard to stagger because
They don't have rotation. Yeah.
Well, also, Teske came out because he had some foul issues.
That's true.
I mean, and he didn't really come out very much.
No, he still played 29 minutes.
But the body of work here is getting big enough that I'm like, all right, it's time to fire up the Brandon Johns machine and see what machine.
And we're not really seeing like flashes from him. You know, like even when Teske was in this mode a couple of years ago where he still looked lost, you could see what he could be.
Like he'd rebound in a forest of guys.
Or he would just block a shot and then he would punt a ball in the fifth row. But you'd be like, all right, as soon as he gets caught up with his body, he's going to be good. And that's the thing with Davis is like, what is he doing that you want on the floor? Like, what do you see that is like, all right, let's try to blow this up. Let's magnify this.
Five fouls against Ethan Happ.
Yeah.
He's 46%.
I mean, I don't want to be down on the kid because I don't think it's his fault. It's just...
Well, you know, I always say never give up on bigs. There's a possibility, but it seems like that might be next year where he kind of gets it together.
I mean, they hit him pretty well in this game by using Livers at the five again. And that was a thing against North Carolina. And like, this was a team that had a lot of big.
The guys you want to put Livers out there against are like, you know, May and other guys who are stretch fives or not Silva. But Michigan did get away with it late in this game, in part because Livers is again hitting a bunch of threes. Like, he had a step back late in the clock. In this game. And I was like, oh, that's
new.
He like bros with Poole, so they're like, oh, let's try the Poole thing, and it worked. Also, Poole had an absolutely terrible possession where he brought it up by himself, dribbled around for 15 seconds, and then took an off balance contested step back three that went down. So,
I guess he's allowed some heat checks.
I'm just not a heat check fan. I like the fact that Iggy doesn't take heat checks.
That's true.
Or I guess a heat check for Iggy is a layup.
That's fair.
And the Poole's heat checks do bother me, but if he's going to shoot like this, okay.
Yeah, and that's like he had a nice game against Northwestern. It wasn't like this, or it wasn't like the Purdue game, but like we're seeing the continuation of his like breakout to the point of where now he is becoming, with Iggy, two guys that are probably going to carry this team offensively.
Yeah, I mean, and his shooting prowess is now much more robust in terms of sample size, because what was he from three in this game?
Was 4-7? Yeah, 4-7.
4-7. So 8-12 from the field.
8-12. And like, so this is like, so he had a little bit of a lull against a very good team in three-point defense against Northwestern. Mm-hmm. But if you stretch back now 5 or 6 games, his three-point percentage is probably close to 50% on 34 attempts.
Yeah.
So that's something that I think everybody was worried about when he kind of scuffled to begin the season. But we have a body of evidence from last year that he's a very good shooter, and now we're getting sort of the evidence that he's improved a great deal over the offseason, especially as a facilitator and a guy who can get to the rim by himself.
Yeah, I was going to say, his game is kind of starting to become more and more complete because he had like 4 assists in this game too, and he also chipped in and got like 5 rebounds. So like he's doing a lot of different things. He also turned the ball over.
He also turned the ball over.
But
so
he's a high usage guy.
I don't think anybody on that coaching staff is like 4 turnovers is acceptable.
No, he isn't the complete product. I said he's becoming the complete product, and you're starting to see like he every once or twice a game he'll have a really nice pass where you'll be like, oh, that was Simpson. Oh no, that was Poole. Wow. And then you know he's long enough, he does get rebounds, and I think his defense is improving.
I think his defense is fine. Like, I don't think it's elite like a couple other guys on the team, but it's not something where...
But he can get there because he's athletic enough.
Yeah, he's a little thin. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to be able to be really physical like Matthews can be.
Or if he's going to be checking guys that are probably also...
Sure.
Also,
yeah, he gets twos and threes most of the time.
Also, he's the guy who's getting kind of the least difficult perimeter matchup because of Michigan's luxury with
right.
their other two guards. So he's definitely good enough for who he needs to check in almost every game.
Yes.
Like, unless last year's Villanova team comes around, I'm not too worried. But if last year's Villanova team comes around, I'm not watching that game.
Well, for very different reasons.
So, yeah, I mean, I think the South Carolina game was more or less fine. You know, they had some defensive issues. I don't think they were all the way locked in. But on the other hand, they scored 1.25 points per possession against a pretty good defense.
Yeah.
That's another top 25 defense. You know, it's, I mean, a top 50 defense, excuse me. They shot efficiently. There weren't a lot of bad possessions that weren't pool kind of aimlessly hitting a step back three. And, you know, even Matthews kind of returned to a level of efficiency that is good to see.
The other thing that I just noticed about Iggy was, like, he had 17 points in this game, but they were 11, he was 11 or 12 from the line.
Well,
so he didn't make a lot of shots, which is, again, different from what we're used to seeing with him, but he still found a way to impact the game on the offensive end, got to the line, and then made all his free throws.
Well, South Carolina's defense was... I mean, they're like the 1990s Knicks out there. Like, when they foul, it is, like, not subtle. Like,
yeah.
It's, and then, every single one of them should do, like, the, oh, I did it, raise the hand thing that...
No, they all made huge faces afterwards. It was like
Like, there was like, no subtlety to any of these fouls. It was just,
I didn't know I'm not allowed to shove my hand up in a guy's face.
Oh, my God. And that, I mean, that's what South Carolina does. They
sure.
put a ton of guys on the line. You can see why. And one of the things that I think they want is, like, when their pressure breaks down, they don't want to give up easy buckets. So they rotate a lot and they foul a lot. And Iggy was able to make up. He's 11 or 12 from the line.
Yeah.
So, like, that'll do it.
And it's just another way that he can impact the game offensively. Even when he's not shooting, is, okay, you can foul him, but he's going to knock all those down. I think that's important to have. And that builds to, like, okay, at the end of game situations, like, South Carolina also had chances to foul Simpson
yeah.
and didn't, which was interesting. It was back-to-back possessions, I think. But now you're thinking, okay, who do you want in the game? And maybe there's times you bring in Brooks for Simpson, but, like, you can get the ball to Poole and you can get the ball to Iggy. Because Iggy can handle enough, and these are guys that we're okay if they get fouled. Like, we prefer that you foul them.
Yeah, and, you know, Poole also shot well from the line in this game, mm-hmm. so establishing that Michigan has a couple of go-to guys that they can go to late in games. You know, for all the end-of-game free-throw stuff we've been fretting about for about a year and a half now with this team,
right?
I don't think they've lost a game because of it. Like, they might have lost a game here or there because they didn't shoot well over the course of a game.
But not because of...
But not right at the end.
The last minute, yeah.
So, yeah, and we're talking about a team that, what, they shot 54% from two against Northwestern. They shot 54%, I think, in this game, too.
52%.
So that's encouraging because both those teams are very good defenses, and Michigan has some variance in their three-point shooting, but if they can be efficient inside the line and if they can actually, like, get their shooters to the line, like, they'll continue to do this kind of stuff.
Well, and they're up to 17th in offense in KenPom.
Yeah.
Which is... Like, well, that's good.
Right. Like, we're like, what? This offense we're worried about.
Right. And yeah. Like, but the top 20 offense on KenPom is... You could deal with that, like, easily.
Right. And
especially when you have a high-end defense.
And so much of the early concern is they play those two openers against bad teams that just threw a succession of junk zones at Michigan. So it wasn't like we're playing a 2-3. It's like we're playing a 2-3 on this possession and we're playing a 1-2-2 on this possession.
Hmm.
And we invented an entirely different thing that's like a box and seven that we're running on this one. And it's for a team that's new, that's in the early stages of their season, to go up against that stuff, well, that's going to result in a lot of long, bad contested threes. That's what had happened. And Michigan didn't hit any of those. When they've played teams that have been man-to-man, they haven't been anywhere near as bad against any of those teams.
Yeah.
So still a little bit worried, like, what happens if Michigan actually comes up against a good zone team, but less so because, you know, you have Matthews, who's establishing himself as an acceptable three-point shooter this year. I mean, I think he's a guy who, if you leave him open, is going to be fine for Michigan.
And he's taken him, too. He used to, like, get the ball at the key and then drive.
Well, you know, I think if he gets an open look, he wants to take it now, which is a good thing. And then, you know, with Iggy and Poole kind of...
Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah.
And Simpson is not going to go 0-5 if you... I mean, that's the only concern that could be... The only thing we've seen from this week is the, you know, can defenses play a tum-tum game against us?
Yeah, and that is a bit of a concern.
And Livers is on the floor enough. Like, he ends up playing enough minutes that, and he's as good a shooter as probably they have.
Yeah, and Teske's not a bad passer either. So, Michigan's early concerns and their actual current offensive rating were based on a couple of games that aren't representative of what they're going to see going forward. So right. I think it's even a little bit more encouraging.
Yep.
So,
can we talk about Len Elmore?
You
were at the game?
I was at the game, so I saw some tweets.
It was just so bad. I
could you elaborate on that?
Well, South Carolina is one of those teams that is going to be drawing a lot of fouls and also committing a lot of fouls. And Len Elmore was incorrect on every single one of those.
Incorrect, like, in what way?
Every time there was a charge and it should be called a charge, he was like, oh, that's a blocking foul. He was complaining about how Michigan fouls all the time and gets away with it. He was...
Really?
Yeah.
That's a take.
Is this football?
I mean, that's... What is going on?
I did mute him for the second half and then followed to it because I was sick of it and I had my kids, so I was like... You know, not being able to pay attention entirely, and
right.
But according to Twitter, it continued pretty badly.
Would you take him over John Crispin?
No, Crispin's bad, but I kind of like it when he goes into his daily weird coaching point that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
This is an enjoyment for you?
Well, it's just they're so bad that it's kind of like, you know, movies that are so bad they become good. So when he starts talking about, that's why you gotta broom the goose. Gotta get a broom out and goose it.
Yeah, Crispin's great. Crispin will just wander into a tangent that makes no sense whatsoever.
And he'll stay on it.
And he'll stay on it and then come back to it again, too. Like, I told you about the goose.
That's what happens when you don't broom your goose.
Elmore, I wasn't sure he was watching this game. Like, maybe he had the state game on in the corner or something like that and was, like, talking about the wrong game. Like, whenever it was his time to comment, there'd be, like, a pause. And then he'd be like, well, you know, if you're driving first with your shoulder, then that's a foul. That's a foul every time.
Fair.
You know, the one thing I want to bring up about Matthews is that he's fairly efficient in this game, 20% usage. That should be the ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, when he gets up to 25, when he gets up to 26, that extra added usage is usually pretty bad because he's not a guy who's an elite shot generator, and Michigan has one in Iggy, and they have one in a developing one in Poole. So as long as Matthews is letting the game come to him and taking the shots that he should be taking, like, I think he can be an efficient offensive player. But he's currently Michigan's highest usage player.
Really?
His O rating is barely above 100. It might have changed to Iggy after this game, but going into the game.
He was.
So,
I mean, what is the ideal distribution? Like, who you want more, Iggy and...
Iggy 25, Poole... maybe a little bit above 20, and then everybody else kind of filling in the blanks. I mean, that's...
Well, and a lot of it's going to be, like, based on matchups, right? Like, you might have a...
Yeah, sure. But, you know, Michigan's best teams on offense... Well, I guess there was the Trey year. But the Stauskas year, he was, like, 22.
Okay.
Which is crazy for your go-to guy, but, like...
Well, Poole was 25 in this game.
Yeah, and that's, I think, something that would be more productive going forward because he's better able to get to the basket. He's more diverse with his moveset than Matthews, and he's much more of a step-back threat. So people have to close him out harder, and he's able to get switches on bigs and get to the rack.
Those numbers are high, too, this year because they don't use their bench very much. So, like, they could... A lot of the usage numbers...
Well, no.
A 22 is like a 20...
Usage is based on, like, your time on the court.
All right. Oh.
So...
Yeah.
It's a
yeah.
Tempo-free.
Tempo-free.
Apologies. So, I mean, I bring this up a lot. I don't want to trash on Matthews. He's obviously a very good player. He's probably got... Like, if he can be a 3-and-D guy in the NBA, he's got a future as a bench player there, but... The offense just kind of bogs down when he's trying to be the alpha dog. And
yes,
I think that if there has to be an alpha dog on a particular possession, it should probably be Iggy, and then he should play off that. And saw that at South Carolina, not so much against Northwestern. But Michigan is through to the finals section of their schedule, where they'll play Western, Air Force, and Binghamton. So they should be 13-0 as they reach the new year, which would be... Quite an accomplishment, and they're tracking as a one seed. Villanova, I know they had the Furman mess up, but I think they're undefeated otherwise. UNC hasn't really played in anybody, but Michigan has 4A wins, which took them a much longer time last year. And then this Big Ten, which picked up another bunch of wins on Saturday.
Yes.
Like, this is going to be a league that produces a one seed, and Michigan is in the best spot to get that one seed.
But when you don't lose, you're probably in a good position.
Yes, that's a good point. But, you know, KenPom is projecting a 15-5 conference schedule. If this team gets 26-5 and they, like, win one game in the Big Ten tournament, I don't think there's any way they're not a one seed.
And there's only, I think, 5 or 6 B games left on the schedule.
Right, because Michigan only plays Illinois once. They only play Rutgers once.
Which is crazy.
So their schedule is going to be, like, the hardest possible schedule, give or take a matchup against, like, an Iowa twice or whatever. But they missed the two really bad teams in the league as double plays. So their strength of schedule should be quite meaty.
Yep. We don't have to go to Nebraska, too, which I like.
Yeah, that's.
And it should be a lot of fun games to watch.
I'm watching more Big Ten basketball since the 2013 season, where everybody was really good, and it was just a lot of fun to watch. So I'm like, I'll flip on a Northwestern-Minnesota game. I'm like, oh, this is interesting enough for me. So good thing, too, because... Football. Who wants to talk about football?
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGo Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGo financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one, finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
You're an MGo Blog reader, so you've probably already met Gordon Fall. Yes, the guy who comes to all of our events. Yes, he is named after Gordie Howe. yes, Wayne Gretzky knows this and says hi, Gordy, whenever they cross paths. Seriously. Gordon has stepped up to sponsor this podcast, so we should tell you what he does. Gordon is a licensed agent with New York Life Insurance. He specializes in holistic policies for individuals with long-term goals and short-term financial situations. He would like to expand that roster now in anticipation of opening his own shop next year, and would rather work with fellow lifelong Michigan obsessives. If you're starting out in your career, growing your family, or beginning to think about retirement, you should talk to Gordon about crafting a plan for you. Visit GordonFall.com to start the conversation. That's GordonFall.com.
Lay it down. Let me see your hand. Show me what you got. You're always talking, but you're not playing. It doesn't match your face. Gotta find my way away from this place. Can you take me now? I want it real. Are you afraid of me now? Are you afraid of me now? Do you feel it? Do you feel it? Do you feel that I can see your soul? Do you feel
it? All right, let's talk some football. Michigan draws, surprise, the Florida Gators in their bowl game, which is on December 29th in Atlanta, Georgia. It's the Peach Bowl, if we care. And Florida, of course, Michigan played them last year, so this is going to be a very familiar sensation.
Some of these guys were actually starters, and we played them in the last bowl game against them.
The last bowl game?
Yes.
Jeez.
Yeah, like Martez Ivey, their left tackle, he was like the number two overall recruit in 2015. Mm. So he started at left guard, and now he's their left tackle.
So they, of course, fire Jim McElwain, and they hire Dan Mullen. So they kind of look like one of these teams that hasn't been very well coached, has a deficiency of top-line talent because they're not recruiting that well. But they have a very good new coach, so they have this kind of up-and-down season where they lose to Kentucky, they lose to Mizzou, they beat the brakes off Florida State. Florida State's not very good. But they're like kind of popping in and out of the top 10 all season because they'll alternate one game that's pretty good with one game that's just
yeah, and none of their games were ever close.
So they're either beating someone badly or losing badly.
Right. I think the closest was 80% against LSU, which is one of the games I watched.
Well, that's a win percentage.
Right, but I'm even so, like the most of the time, either they fell behind by 10 in the first quarter, and it's just kind of a slow death after that, right. Or the opposite. They get up by 17, and then it's just a...
And yeah. The exception was the South Carolina game where they fall behind by a bunch and then come back.
Right.
Which must have been delicious for... Spencer Hall, but
yeah, they're. I mean, they. The thing about the SEC this year is that the bottom half is pretty bad,
right?
And so, and like the Kentucky is actually surprisingly good, and Missouri is surprisingly good.
Well, Kentucky is a defense running around without an offense. They're like kind of like last year's Michigan team.
Yeah, and then and Missouri is the opposite.
Yeah,
and so like those are hard teams to really gauge a team against anyway.
Right.
And they also played two FCS teams this year.
Two?
SEC, man. I don't know. I didn't look, but like they played Idaho. So that might have been scheduled.
Yes, they've just become FCS.
Right, so that might have been scheduled.
So that's not their fault.
I see.
I don't care.
Still
SEC.
Still kind of your fault for scheduling Idaho.
And for only having 8 conference games, which they do in order to jack up these November FCS games while everybody else is losing to each other.
SECS to baby.
Yep.
Anyway, so this is a team that still has Felipe Franks, still has Jordan Scarlett, still has Tyree Cleveland.
The same offensive line except for the new center.
Yeah, and their top wide receiver is actually Van Jefferson, who almost came to Michigan after he transferred from Ole Miss.
Right.
But hopped over to Florida. But they're like another team that's kind of like Michigan where they got like 4 guys with 30 catches.
Their other receiver actually is a transfer as well, Trevon Grimes, if you remember him from Ohio State.
No.
6'5", I mean, not leapy. He's weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is not quite what you're going to get from Dan Mullen down the road because Dan Mullen wants the quarterback to run a bunch. Felipe Franks is trying, but he's got like 200 yards on the year. I mean, we saw last year.
When you cut out sacks, he's got like almost 500 yards.
Okay.
Yeah.
What? They have 250 sack yards?
No, he's at like 400 something. I think he's got like 100 sack yards.
Okay.
He does take he doesn't take that many sacks because he chucks it away, and when he chucks it away, they're like intentional groundings that are not called it because on the sideline you're allowed to throw the ball 100 feet in the air and it doesn't count.
So he's I mean, we saw him last year. He's decently fast. He's not at all. He's not a shake kind of guy.
No, he looks like an NFL quarterback running. Like, he doesn't even like bend down at all when he's running. He's just going. So he's a 6'6" guy right. who's just kind of charging downfield. But you know, you have to, because he's going to do it so often. It's effective enough. It.
Right.
I don't want to make the
how many
comparison
carries
to 2008.
A game is he getting?
84 for 350 yards.
Right. So,
and 6 touchdowns.
Why is that funny?
Because you just live, that's their strategy when they're in short. They just lean forward with 6'6" guy.
Okay, so we're talking about a guy who's going to run 6-8 times a game. They're going to have a quarterback run game that's a little bit like Michigan's quarterback run game, except it's going to be more Tebow-y.
It looks more like they gave Rich Rodriguez John Navarre.
That is deeply unfair to anybody playing football in something other than a wheelchair. I
don't want to use 2008 Michigan at all.
I have to defend the honor of Felipe Franks here. Sir.
Have you watched some Felipe Franks?
I watched like him last year.
He's like a 50% passer, and like half his throws are like dead on, and the other half are like,
his completion rate is 59%.
It's because they throw a lot of screens.
Okay, well, that's,
his downfield success rating in the two games I watched was under 50%.
Well, that's definitely something that's happening.
Yes.
So this is a team that has a much better organized offense this year, but doesn't really have a standout wide receiver. And the running backs, I would say, they're B-plus guys. They're like about Kieran Higdon's level. Like, Scarlett's a pretty good player.
Yeah. Scarlett, I thought, was a lot better than Pirine, who should not pronounce his name like that at all.
There's a guy on Oklahoma. I mean, let's...
Perrine. Perrine is a fine name.
No, just let's move on.
But Scarlett, I think, is a... There must be some poor damn Scarlett going on in there.
Are there scatological jokes? Is it scatological jokes both
urinological?
One and two, or is it just two?
I think urinological or something. There's a...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's skip those.
Urological.
Let's not do those. And let's continue talking about their running backs.
Scarlett is a ball of knives.
Okay.
And there must be some poor damn Scarlett in his numbers, because he seems on film to be a much better runner than Pirine, who's kind of not just a north-south guy, but best as a north-south guy.
And kind of the one thing that jumps out from their S&P stats is they are the number 15 team in pass protection this year, which is the same leap that Michigan took when they hired Ed Warner, where it's just like they were awful last year.
Yeah, and I think that's probably climbed over the season, too. I think they probably started like 60%, right. Or 60th, and moved up to the... And the offensive line has come a long way over the course of the season.
This the whole like S&P stat page, just I see the number, and I see Jim McElwain's head pop up like, hello, I'm a head football coach somewhere now. And it's like, why did you do that, Central Michigan? Like, what could have possibly convinced you that this was going to be a good idea?
So they're good at pass pro.
Yes.
Well, they're good at mitigating. They're going to leave in a tight end. They're going to leave in the running back a lot of times.
Okay.
And I don't think they're...
And they don't throw that much.
What do we think about Michigan's pass rush, then?
Well, it can't be worse than it was in the previous game.
That's
literally
probably
true. Literally
correct.
True. I mean, they won't have Gary. But
they have Winovich?
If you aren't going to play in the bowl game, I think you've already announced it.
Well, okay. But will they have effective Chase Winovich, or will they have broken Chase Winovich?
Well, I mean, whatever Winovich's issue was that allowed him to play in the Ohio State game probably isn't going to last a whole month.
Okay, well, that's the question.
Yeah.
Okay, so we would expect at least return to semi-form?
Right. Well, and the thing about Rashawn Gary is his pass rush was all edge most of the time, and then occasionally he would come in and do a really good bull rush, but it was just the wrong pattern for him. So, like, the drop-off to the second guy isn't going to be as huge as you would think from Rashawn Gary to not Rashawn Gary.
Okay.
The unfortunate thing about missing Gary is that their right tackle is decent. They give him a lot of tight end help. But as soon as people started shooting inside of him, he didn't have the capability to hold that off. And like a guy like Gary with his athleticism would have really been. But that's also something that, you know, we've seen from Quiddy before.
Sure.
And Uche should be able to eat that guy alive. His tight ends are not great at pass protection. They're just there because he needs the help.
No tight ends are great at pass protection. That's...
There's meh, and then there's like, oh, this guy's shooting inside of me. Should I have done something about that?
No, they're all the same. There's no such thing as a tight end that's better than a different tight end in pass protection. It's all the same.
There are quite a few shots of the tight end staring over poor Felipe Franks, who just chucked the ball away.
It's not always his fault.
Yeah.
Not always his fault.
Anyway, the left tackle is Ivy, who is, yeah, you know, a five-star. Athletic, but also makes more mistakes than... He looks like a freshman sometimes out there.
Well, he's been coached by Jim McElwain, hired person, so that's not unexpected.
Yeah.
Did you have something there, Dave?
No. Well, I mean, I was just thinking, like, are there... Their wide receivers don't seem like game breakers.
Well, here's my concern. The two big guys we already talked about are right. The outside guys. Everyone else is some kind of slot receiver, even though they'll play outside as well.
They can run a lot of crosses.
They're all like top 100 or top 150. Yes, they're all very fast.
Well, good.
And like,
it's got to be a game where Ambry Thomas gets lost.
Yes. Yes.
It's about time, is it not? He's probably going to play next year.
Well, I mean, also, you can flip Hill into the slot if Grimes or Van Jefferson is one of the outside receivers. You know, Watson will probably handle it. Like, he had the worst game of his life against Ohio State.
Yes.
We have a lot of evidence that that's not who he is. Like, he'll be able to cope.
Right.
As long as they get some pass rush.
I don't want to see him against Kadarius Toney, who's like their athlete who...
Toney?
Yeah. He gets some Wildcat snaps, too. And
that guy's got...
Does some Denardian things.
Got a last name for a first name and a first name for a last name.
Is that as good as name as Alanzo Frink?
Alanzo Frink is a great name. It's an all-time great name, Alanzo Frink.
We had this discussion yesterday.
All-time great name, Alanzo Frink. What do you think about that?
This is a great segment.
I don't care about that name. Ugh. I actually just kind of went back to thinking about P. Ryan again.
Alanzo Frink. Anyway, Florida presumably has some sort of defense.
Yeah, actually, I think the defense is actually better than their offense, well, even though they're ranked about the same weird place in KenPom right now.
KenPom?
Have I moved on? My brain moved on?
That's completely...
I deleted the S&P page from my homepage on my phone and replaced it with KenPom.
When
that spot.
Seth has fully transitioned from football to basketball... He's like the last person out of the building. It's coming down.
Nobody's listening to this segment. They're all like, well, basketball's done.
John Falk would last like a few minutes longer than me.
Nobody's listening to this segment.
Yeah.
So we can say whatever we want. What do you want to say, Dave?
I'm saving what I want to say for tomorrow.
Oh.
Speaking of names, their best passer, their Uche kind of guy, is named Polite, and he is anything but...
I mean, Ja'Kai Polite is a very well-known person in college football. He is an elite edge rusher.
Yes.
Who is a first-round potential draft pick.
Yes.
Who will be a test for whoever Michigan's tackles are. It'll be interesting to see if Bushel Beatty comes back. Or if they just kind of ride with Stuber or what.
How many games has Mayfield played?
Two. So he could play in this one.
How about Milton? Was that his fourth against Ohio State or his third?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Well, I would care if this is his fifth.
I was hoping that you had your spreadsheet, because I'm going to need that.
Well, in any case, this is kind of a standard issue Florida defense with a lot of very intimidating players.
Yeah, CC Jefferson is still around. Do you remember?
Oh my God,
didn't he have like this video before last year's game about like a draft preview video or something that somebody?
This is like going to be the third time we've played that kid.
Yep,
it's insane.
I think we've seen him three times, many times as Iowa.
So,
yeah, so they're good edge rushers. Another guy we recognize is David Reese.
Of course. Yes, David.
I saw him in high school.
Sorry, he was a commit at the time. What was I supposed
to do?
I'm
not complaining. He blocked an extra point.
So he's good, and I'd still, you know, quite happy that we had Devin Bush instead. I think that was the good move. The other linebacker gets a lot of tackles, Vosian Joseph, a very small weak side linebacker.
Okay.
Looks like a safety. And that hurts him because he falls off of tackles all the time.
Are you sure it's Vosian? That doesn't sound right.
Vashon?
Vashon?
That's probably what it is.
I'm not Ace. I'm sorry.
Well, I just want like someone to be able to not listen to this podcast and be confident that it was a good decision. So there we go.
All right. Well, I've watched these guys, and I like their secondary.
Okay.
Yeah. They got an actual hybrid space player, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Again, he starts at strong safety. He's a complete safety.
So the worst thing about this matchup is I thought, oh, that guy added a last name. He used to be just Chauncey Gardner, and now he's Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, as sometimes happens. I'm so bored. I'm so bored with Florida. I'm so, so bored.
I feel like you're a correct representation of the majority of the fan base
situation. Why did they do this? Why didn't they give us LSU? I'd like to play LSU.
UCF?
Georgia.
I don't want
to. We also just played UCF. My goodness.
I want
to play Georgia.
I absolutely want to play Georgia, especially after
watching them
against Florida. Florida and Georgia were just as good as each other in this game. And Georgia pulled it out. Georgia was fine in the end, and Florida made too many mistakes in the end. But, like, they were a match for each other throughout most of this game.
I know, but, like, there was a lot of supporting evidence indicating that Florida is much worse than Georgia this year.
I would co-sign that.
Fine in the rest of the season.
I would rather play Georgia because I'm just so sick of playing Florida. Like, I'm done.
I think
Big Ten member Florida, I'm over it. Although, if they get rid of records. Oh, yeah. Oh my God. We completely forgot.
What?
We have a conference room destruction announcement.
We do. We lost one.
Illinois. Has fallen beneath Rutgers in KenPom.
You can't do that, Illinois.
With preseason conference room destructions from Maryland and Ohio State, we are down to a mere 10 conference rooms, although we might build a Fordham one.
Or Texas and Oklahoma one, if rumors are true.
Ugh. There's a grant of rights for like another 8 years. I think it's a little premature to talk about that.
Anyway, Illinois is a volleyball school now. Without a conference room.
Right. Anyway, back to... Can we just end this segment? Do we have a moral... What's
their special teams? Or are you going to give us a cat picture?
I'm definitely giving you a cat. They have a punter who can punch a 60 yards.
Oh, Townsend, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so like, get whatever
freshman
you need.
Kicker can kick.
Get whatever you need to get off your chest so we can end this segment.
I got nothing on my chest.
All right, that's the Peach Bowl, everybody.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper. I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Homeshore Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESURELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homeshore Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
So we're having a brief hockey moment here because I want to talk about it, and I don't want to step on Dave's toes for the upcoming hockey cast.
Under protest, we may add.
But I'm not on the hockey cast because I have other things to do.
What else do you have to do?
I have two small children I have to look at. My wife...
Look at?
Well, my wife
that
needs...
That seems helpful.
My wife has been on baby duty pretty much permanently for football season, so...
Sure.
I guess time to, like, take them out to the library and...
What do you guys do at the library?
Mostly they eat books.
Eat books?
Well...
So you don't read to them?
I mean, I don't supervise them. I just take them to the library.
And just let them go, and then you read books?
Well, you know. Anyway.
What do they have at the library?
Do you know who else has a lot of small children? Is Minnesota.
That's a good point. They are a state that has children. Anyway, Michigan
I did a good job of avoiding this for like a minute.
A tie and a
loss.
I meant
they have a lot of freshmen.
All right. We got to talk about 3-on-3 overtime. It's like... That,
no.
It's like the Tropic, not Tropic Thunder.
Wait, are you coming out against it or for it?
I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
What's the movie where there's like they have the Flint Firebirds?
Are you asking me about?
It's a Will Ferrell movie.
There you go. Ask Seth.
It's like a minor league baseball basketball team. Anyway,
Top Gun.
There's a clip from it.
Air Bud.
That where it's like, this doesn't mean anything. And it'd be like, and then Will Ferrell says, but it gets the people going. And that is 3-on-3 overtime.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything because it doesn't count in the pairwise.
Right.
So it's just a tie in the pairwise. And like, college hockey keeps adding on all this stuff to the end of games that doesn't matter.
Well, the Big Ten does.
Well, yeah. So now there's a 5-on-5 overtime for 5 minutes. That counts. So
right.
If you win in that, you get a win. Hooray. And then there's a 3-on-3 5-minute overtime that counts for an extra Big Ten point. Who cares? And then if that doesn't settle things, there's a shootout for an extra Big Ten point, which who cares?
It's not like a full-on shootout. It's a best-of-one shootout.
And it's a best-of-one shootout?
Yeah, it's not best-of-three.
Really?
Yeah, because Michigan lost one of those.
I didn't know that.
Oh, well, I think you were there. Yeah, it was the Wisconsin one that they lost a couple weeks ago where they went the first – both people missed, I think, on the first one, and then Michigan missed, and Wisconsin scored, and they all came off the bench, and they're all jumping around. And I was like, wait, aren't they going to leave the ice? Because the third guy needs to go. Apparently, he does not.
I didn't know that. And that tells you how much I pay attention to the shootout stuff at the end because it's just like none of this matters. It's not quite as bad as they instituted the shootout – 1 year, and Michigan had a non-conference shootout. So
against Fair State.
And I'm like, yeah. This literally means nothing.
Oh, but the student section went bonkers when they won.
I love this stuff. I don't care if it means nothing. I want them to, like, if you're still tied after five rounds of shootout, play Scoro.
That's like
if
Dave
that doesn't
Brandon
work
level.
Then you pull out like the bubbles and have everyone play with those.
Like, 3-on-3 is fine. Like,
3-on-3 is awesome. It's fun hockey. I don't care about shootouts. Shootouts are boring. Shootouts are like, okay,
shootouts are boring.
Like, we're going to watch one guy, like, sit around. And
but anyway.
Go. Yeah.
So, like, the NCAA needs to do something about this. Like, you can't just keep adding on more and more esoteric versions of hockey to create, like, an extra point in a conference game. I mean, who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, it does get the people going, though.
Why don't we just stay with ties? If that's what pairwise is going to do.
I think all hockey should be 3-on-3 with no offsides. That would be really fun. I want you to tell Anthony this. For your podcast.
Maybe he'll listen. Do you think he'll listen?
No.
You don't think he'll listen?
No.
He's got to prep for tomorrow, though.
Sure. Well, he's also got to think about it. But anyway, so this 3-on-3 thing is it's fun, but like at least what the NCAA has to do is they have to maybe make that like a 3-versus-2 win. So like if you win in a 3-on-3, it should be 2 points. And like it's, like they should actually do that.
That's what I see.
For like pairwise purposes.
Oh, yeah, but then other conferences don't have...
Yeah, but they should just do it. They should just mandate it. 10 minutes of 3-on-3. Go for it.
For every conference.
For every conference.
That's what overtime should be. So I would be interested if overtime was just 3-on-3 and it was equal across the board.
Right.
That would be interesting.
10 minutes of 3-on-3. And if...
Because the first time when Norris scored, I think it was against Wisconsin a few weeks ago in the 3-on-3 overtime, and they won, it was exciting. And I watched it. The last 2 3-on-3s, I didn't watch a second.
You didn't watch it?
No.
Why?
Aren't you there?
Yes. Because it didn't matter. I started writing so that I didn't go home at 11:30 or 12 at
night. Dude, you are missing some excellent Quinn Hughesing.
That means nothing.
It's true. It doesn't mean anything.
And that's why I was... And everyone... And I get a little... You know, and that's probably something I need to work on as like... part of a fan in me, but I get annoyed when everyone else cheers about things that don't matter when we've blown an opportunity to beat a team that we need to beat in order to make the postseason, and we didn't, and then they're going to win in something that doesn't matter, and everyone's going to be like, yeah!
It's sports. None of it matters, David.
No, but
Well, that is my original point for what this segment should have been.
Well, there we go. But you're right. You're right. It is annoying that, like, Michigan gets a tie, and they really needed a win. And then it's like, yay, we got something that doesn't mean anything.
Anthony and I said in our previous podcast, how many points does Michigan need in these next 4 games, 3 of them at home, 1 against a not very good Minnesota team, 1 series, and 1 series against Michigan State, who is better but is not at Michigan's level? How many points do you think we said they need out of those 12 possible?
65.
Yes. We said 9. Do you know how many they got?
4.
3.
3. So, this is, like, this team...
Do you know how many home games they have in the second half?
5.
Do you know how many conference home games they have in the second half?
4.
Yes. They're not getting these games back. Because of the weird things of college hockey, they get to go on the road for all these games, which is actually in some ways beneficial because you can fly up pairwise
right.
if you win them. But if they're not winning them at home, and they're playing to draws...
Well, so this is not a great team, and part of that is because you look at this team and how many guys are you like, okay, that's a scoring line player. I got 3.
I don't have that many.
Lockwood.
Okay.
Norris.
I think on a good team he's a second line center.
I said scoring line, so that's for top 2 lines.
So it's the top 6 forward is what you're saying,
right?
Okay.
6 forward, and then Mike Paciuto.
Not Mike. Nick.
Nick. Right.
Yeah.
So that's 3. That's And they're all
Mike would be fine on a good scoring line just because, if you pair him with 2 good scorers, he'd be great.
And then you're talking about, like, which one of those guys seems like a first liner? Nobody.
Maybe Lockwood.
Maybe.
And I think Lockwood's a shooter on a good line if you put him with a creative center and a guy who gets in front of the net.
And this,
neither of which they have.
And this kind of goes back to this uncertainty period late in the Red Berenson era. So... You recruit in hockey way out front. So Michigan has a recruit from who was born in 2004 right now. So he's 13 or 14, depending on when his birthday is.
Sure.
And so this is kind of when the chickens come home to roost. And Michigan's tried to mitigate it But, I mean, you have Jake Slaker, who was a find as a 20-year-old junior player. He's way better than Michigan has any right to expect that late of a pickup to be. But he's also, you know, on the top line. And he should be on the third line.
Yes.
And then Nick
Becker.
And Becker is a guy who is going to go to Tech.
He's the poor man's version of Slaker.
Well, he's a poor man's version of...
Well, not Slaker. You're right. He's the poor man's...
Dexter Danks.
Sure.
And he's, you know, a guy who was going to be a Tech. And that's a good pickup for Tech, but it's a good pickup for Tech. So, you know, I'm disappointed in the goaltending. I'm disappointed in some of the defenders.
We disagree on the goaltending. I just think that they're not going to score enough goals.
Yeah, and that's because...
And they'd take shifts off on defense because it's not... It's super inconsistent. You see them play really, really well and control the puck and keep the house and slot clean, and then you see teams overwhelm them, and you're just and it's not like, oh, they must have got stuck with like the seventh or sixth defenseman out there. It's the top line sometimes.
Yeah.
So I don't know what is that, Brian? Well, like, is that coaching?
I don't know.
Right. I don't know. Is it effort?
I think last year they kind of caught a wave because Cooper Meredy way overperformed. And they had Calderon, who I think outshot his expectations, and they scored enough goals to make the tournament. And that was deeply in question for much of the year. They had to like win a bunch of games at the end to even get in. And I remember doing like a bubble watch basically the whole second half of the year. And then they did enough so that by winning the Wisconsin series in the playoffs, they guaranteed themselves a bid. So they were very, very close to not even being in the tournament. And then they win a couple games, they go to the Frozen Four, and it's like, oh, yeah, that was a really successful year. But because hockey has the worst tournament in all of sports, that's not necessarily... I prefer to look at the year.
Yeah.
And the year was, you know, a bubble.
They're a top 10 team.
They were a bubble team. I mean...
I mean, Pairways got them to like 8th or 9th by the end.
I know, but... I just felt like they were on the bubble for the whole year, and they managed to put it together towards the end of the year.
Well, I think the defensive intensity picked up in the second half, but I also think that what happened was the third line came together, and it was now their second line. So you had a really good top line.
Of both Pastyovs and Becker.
Which was the third line, Pasta line. And then the first line was a good scoring line because you had Calderon, who played well. You had Marody, who is an NHL player, and Danks was a nice senior addition to that who did produce. And then you had what is the top line now was the second line, which worked, minus Lockwood. And then you had the Pasta line as third line. So then you have like three lines that kind of work. You can kind of like gerrymander a fourth line to a certain extent.
Well, fourth line doesn't, like, if you have a fourth line that doesn't score much, that just makes you look...
Now you have a second line as a top line, you have your grind line as your second line, and then you have, I don't know, after that. And they don't really give you goals, and they, you know, you
live with it. And then, you know, the Corsi stuff isn't where we want it to be.
This year?
Yeah.
I disagree. I think they're doing exactly what they need to do. They're out shooting teams. They're dominating games. Pucks aren't going in the net.
House, though, is usually pretty even, right?
I mean,
they were peppering Minnesota last night.
I mean, that was...
They're not getting, like... they're not getting infinite grade A's. And, like, this series has been different. They've had chances this series. And for one of the state games, I thought they had good chances to score two, and they didn't. Why? I mean, I
mean, they have breakdowns where, you know, Boca is caught up ice on a... Like, Michigan has a two-on-one or a semi-breakaway with Brendan Warren, and he doesn't score it, and then... They get like a 3-on-1 the other way because for some reason Nicholas Boca is deep in the zone.
Yeah.
And that's been pretty consistent. And I don't know what to do with that because Boca's a senior.
And he's been drafted.
And he's...
So it's not like he doesn't have talent.
He's like a 7th rounder. So it's like...
Is he?
Yeah.
Well.
So, but he seems worse than last year. And like, is Luce a little better? Yeah, he's a little better. But he's still not great. And then Martin, I think he was a 2nd-round pick, and he's just... Ben, just the
he's
guy.
Fine. Yeah, but I mean, he's a second or third pair guy.
Well, and then against State, he throws the puck in the slot, you know, on a penalty kill, and they score on that. And it's just like, what?
But that's what I mean. They look really good on defense, and then they look just out of their minds on defense. And I don't know what that is. I don't know how you can have such like varying crazy extremes.
Yeah, I don't either. But I also think that the goaltending, like what's man's save percentage and what's Levine's save percentage? There's no amount of terrible defense that justifies an 850.
Yeah, I don't know what man's save percentage is.
When's the last time man made like a crazy good save?
Last night.
Yeah, he made a couple last night. Well, that's been the whole.
He also did.
I was late to come on.
He also did on Friday.
Okay. But that's been kind of the story of the year, where every single good opportunity from the opposition goes in the net. Like, nobody is making a grade A save, and I think that's.
I mean, he made one in overtime on Friday. That was.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. That was this weekend's problem. I think that was.
Well, he also hasn't played every game.
Well,
I mean,
but they have a lot of Levine in this baked into their record right now, right? And that's been pretty bad.
Right. And that's, I think that we've seen what Hayden Levine is, and he's a nice goaltender. He's probably a good backup, but like he was, when they would lose games last year, it was a lot of times kind of some breakdowns he would have. And so it's man going forward, unless you have somebody else, but it's, in my opinion, it's man going forward.
Well, I kind of feel like this is going to be a 500-ish team in this tournament, and then they're going to have to try to stock up next year because they have, this is like, they've done a good job of recovering from what was a completely garbage class when Mel arrived. It had like two guys in it.
For the one that's coming up,
the 2019 class, which will be on campus next year.
Okay.
So they got John Beecher, who was like the last big fish from the national team. And then they recently flipped Cam York because Boston College is kind of.
Yeah, I mean, if Michigan's going to complain about hockey, I think BC's probably going to be right there with us.
Well, I mean,
they're in a different spot right now.
They lost one of their guys to the NHL, and then they had six decommits. And that's across, I think, two or three classes, but like big name guys, and York might not be the last one. But York will give someone to plug into the Quinn Hughes slot. He's a very similar player. And then. You know, they have some guys coming through, and then 2020 is like when the Mel recruiting will finally kick in. But that's, you just got to live with it, because that's like what Michigan set themselves up with this long period of kind of, we don't know if Red's going to be here or not.
Worry that Michigan's a little behind the eight ball because the Big Ten is getting better.
Nah,
fast.
I mean, they're not behind the eight ball. Because
no, because like the Big Ten is, which team have you seen this year that is definitively better than Michigan?
Notre Dame.
Maybe Notre Dame.
No, those games were pretty close. And
one game Michigan stole, and the second one was a blowout.
I don't think they stole the first one. I think they won the first one. The second one, they had a really bad. That was the one that was not on TV, and it was like BTN Plus did not work. So there was about a 10-minute stretch where they gave up five goals.
Yes.
But the rest of that was they played them even. Now, after that, it's 5-1. But they could have been up 2-0, I think, in the first and had a goal called back and then.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think
Notre Dame is definitively better than Michigan.
But Michigan has rickety goaltending and they have way too many.
They have too many breakdowns.
Too many breakdowns. And then they don't have.
Now, Ohio State might be.
Yeah.
We haven't seen them. But no one else I've seen have I been like, oh, no, they don't have a chance in the series.
And then they don't really have the talent to make up for it. Like, Norris scores goals, but, he's the beneficiary of so much Quinn Hughes stuff that he should be.
Well, his goal last night was because Robson left the net, cleared, his defensemen were in terrible positions, tried to clear it up the ice, hit Norris with a great pass, and Norris hit an empty net.
Well, also, he hit the inside of the post twice in that game, too.
He did.
So, like, he's got a nice shot, but it just doesn't feel like he's finishing as much as he should. And so that's fine.
He doesn't really have.
He was never going to be, like, that sniper guy. Like, his top end is, like, Carl
And
Hagnall.
He's improved. Like, Anthony and I talked about this. I was like, you know, is Norris better than you thought? And I was like, yeah, he has taken the jump to the next level. And that's the thing that's disconcerting, is you have guys, I think, that have done that on this team, and this is still.
But who else? I mean, I forget if it's Nick or Mike.
Oh, Nick Pastajal has.
Yeah, Nick
and
has.
Becker has been what he's going to be. I think Slaker has hockey has improved.
Well, those guys come in at 20.
But so you're asking me who has like improved their games?
I don't see it really from either of those guys, and I don't see it from anyone on defense.
No, defense is like maybe true.
Ciccone seems better to me this year.
But I don't know that. But that's kind of my point. Is like there are certain guys that I think have gotten a little bit better, and it hasn't really showed. And it hasn't really showed in terms of team results. But then who are you looking for a jump from that has a jump? And I don't know that there's many of them left. No. And that's the part where it's kind of like, this is a really good marketing campaign for listening to tomorrow.
10 minutes it is.
Well, I watch hockey too, man. Come on.
Brian needs a hug.
Well, you know, I'm just looking at the recruits, which seem pretty good.
We will see.
Especially in 2020.
I hope so. Well, in 2020, that's a little different, yes.
You promised me we're not going to talk about recruiting.
We can talk about college hockey recruiting because Michigan's got a lot of dudes. So
they do. Don't they have like 12? Don't you remember that? Was it the 2005 class that had like 11 and like half the team was freshmen?
So when they flipped York, I read the Daily article on it, and they mentioned that neutral zone, which is pretty much the number one scouting service for OHL and college teams. Had Michigan the top class in the country, and that's why I went and I looked at it. And lo, it is true, because they have 12 guys in it.
Yeah, it's got to be by volume.
And, well, I mean, their star average is slightly above 4, so that's pretty good. Yeah, I don't think all 12 of those guys are going to be on campus next year.
How? We're not losing 12.
No, but... so it's going to be...
Michigan Hockey Summer will clear that down.
I mean, Michigan Hockey Summer will do some stuff, but, like... They're going to be putting guys off, and then they're going to be putting guys off again, and there's going to be some decommits. I'm assuming that the hockey program has told these guys that we have a conditional slot for you based on these three things happening. But
yeah, I don't. This is way deeper than
yeah.
So what I can weird. Comment on.
Yeah. So yeah, they got a lot of guys coming in. We'll see how many actually come in. But anyway, that's a good teaser for tomorrow.
Yeah, listen.
Well, you hear the same takes, except...
Well, we're going to talk about some different things, and we're going to preview a couple other things, so there'll be some new information.
All right.
And Anthony loves goalies.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. This is David Nasternak along with Seth Fisher and Brian Cook. And if you're still listening at this point, please email Brian and he will send you money.